You're listening to Counterculture on RCR.
Reality Check Radio.
Good morning and welcome to Counterculture here on Reality Check Radio with Marie. Joining me now, and we're going to do this on a regular basis, and I'm really excited about that, is Helen Houghton, leader of the New Conservative Party and student. You know, what are they call them Scarfies in Dunedin, Helen. What do they call them in Christchurch? What do you call yourselves at the University of Canterbury?
Well, we're pretty normal. We're just students.
We're just students.
Yeah.
Good morning. Hey, now look, I know it's that time of year, exams. Did you survive?
Only just. Look, I have to admit, I had a heavy load. I had four exams, and they were within 7 days. Pretty heavy law exams. After the first two exams, I became ill, so that wasn't helpful. So I did the last two exams, with a bit of a what I thought was a bit of a head cold, but turns out I had COVID. So anyway, I got through them. So I'm excited that now I'm actually halfway through my third year. So look, there's an end in sight, and who knows, I might actually become a lawyer. I mean, fancy that.
It's amazing how the academic year sort of seems to fly by, you know. Same thing with my husband as well, you know, obviously studying too. So yeah. Well done. I'm glad you got through it, but there's still a lot going on. And of course, you've got this going on in your mid-semester break. Sal Grover, we talked about Sal coming out to New Zealand last time. Auckland tomorrow. She's got a bit full dance card, Helen. She's in Auckland tomorrow, New Plymouth on Saturday, then next Tuesday in Wellington, and then this time next week down with you in Christchurch. Last time we talked about Sal, people may remember her. She's the tickle versus giggle lady. Give us firstly a little background why the court case, why is it so important? And then we'll talk about some of the logistical fun and games that organisers have been having about getting Sal's event off the ground.
Sal, I'm really excited about that because I'm actually on one of the panels. So here in Christchurch, when Sal is here in Christchurch, I am on the panel with Sal, so I can't wait to meet her. That's alongside Jill Ovens, Women's Rights Party leader as well. And we have a parent of an adult girl who also believes she's trans. So there's, a nice mix on our panel down here in Christchurch. Maybe you've heard that they've they had cancelled one of the venues already up in New Plymouth. So that's ongoing, and I'm sure the Free Speech Union are going to look into that for Jill. So Jill's up there dealing with that right now. But at this point, it looks like the other venues haven't pulled out, thank goodness. So Sal Grover is a woman. Clearly that's an issue for some people in the communities. We have some males who like to portray themselves as women. Sal started an app. You know, you've got all these apps on your phone. I'm sure everyone's aware of what they are. So she started an app purely for women. They became aware that there was a male who had signed up, and so they removed him because, you know, there was nothing sinister in it. You know, they saw, you know, you can see the picture of the people who sign up, and so he clearly looked like a male. So they took him off the page, which I would as well. You know, I mean, I've run a women's charitable trust, and if a male turned up, I would kindly ask him to leave and let him know that this is a woman's space. You know, I don't see anything wrong with that, but he turned around and has sued her for discrimination because, you know, he claims to be a woman. And now this is the problem in Australia because they have changed their sex ID, the way that they can do that. Now, we don't have that here yet in New Zealand, but it's on the cards that, you know, males can turn around and identify as women without even giving evidence that they
have the birth certificate thing, though, don't we?
All I know is that this is a concern because, see, in New Zealand, with our Bill of Rights, we don't have gender identity protected, whereas in Australia they do. So that's a protected. So this is where the discrimination lawsuit has come into it. So yeah, I'd have to go back and look at the sex ID.
So we have it for the birth certificates. Self-identification process for amending sex on a birth certificate is a simple administrative process that requires a statutory declaration. It is based on how a person identifies rather than the eligibility criteria as a medical treatment, and that is from the Department of Internal Affairs. That's off their website. So
right, so they have, they've already changed it. Mm. Yeah. Although the Australian law has gone further, like I said, with our Bill of Rights, we have sex itself, discrimination against sex itself, but not gender identity. So, you know, there's a lot still happening in that space.
So we're looking at actually then creating non-binary as a accepted class, as opposed to the binary male-female.
That's right. Where if somebody's just identifying as whoever they think they are, then that will be, you know, if we turn around online or anywhere and say, well, actually, no, I don't believe that, well, you know, then we're discriminating against somebody. So that's where Australia is at with that. That's protected in Australian law. And so we're also concerned that this lawsuit isn't a precedent. It will not be a precedent for New Zealand because we're not there with that human rights issue around gender identity. But it's coming, okay? And so this is what we're keeping an eye on, and it is a very important case for New Zealand.
It's a canary in the coal mine, isn't it?
It is. And like I said, you know, the charitable trust that where I support a lot of women, and they've been through different traumas in their life, that could then mean that I would have to accept a male in that space if he walks in claiming that he's you know, legitimately a female, which, to be honest, we would have to close that group down because we, as you know, there's a reason why women want single sex, you know, spaces, their protection in that. And you know, I don't need to go into all of that now, but it's interesting. I've heard about through the law, you know, you hear about different situations, that there was a group of males over in the UK a few years back that had a group where it was entirely males, okay, and it was a male space where, you know, they didn't allow females. It was, you know, a male space, and I don't have a problem with that, Marie. I have no problem with that. I think, you know, guys should be able to meet and do whatever they're doing, man cave, whatever it is, without women thinking that we need to be in there or that they are discriminating against women. You know, this is a problem where we are saying as one sex that the other sex can't actually go and hang out and do manly things with, you know, and vice versa. And this is where it's become. It's like women can't go and, you know, have their groups without a male thinking that actually, no, you're discriminating against me. I should be invited in or allowed to be in this space. It's absurd. So this particular group of males, they found out that some lawyers and some judges and some, you know, high profile males were involved in it, and all of a sudden they were asked that they had to actually remove themselves from there because people were saying that if you're in the space, then how can you be defending women because you're actually, you know, you're not going to be able to defend women if you are creating a space where it's only men allowed. I mean, how absurd is that? That's the thinking around.
Well, this is all part of that same slippery slope, though, isn't it? To take everything to that non-binary, in the middle, no defined postmodernist, dirty old French men place. Where that it's, you're not allowed to have black and white, you're not allowed to have male, female, you're not allowed to have binaries that have existed in nature since, you know, those first atoms were created. So it's a slippery slope. It is a slippery slope that if you let one thing go, then the next thing slides and the next thing slides and so on and so forth. So at some point, some barriers need to be put up. So Sal is going to, she's coming around. So she's going to talk about the court case and some of the experiences she's had today. Yes?
Absolutely. So, yeah, we're really looking forward to that. And, you know, we have a mix on the panel. So, for example, Jill Ovens is an advocate for women's rights, and clearly she'll be supporting a lot of what Sal is already doing. And I'm speaking because of the advocacy I have around children. It's all linked, you know, it's all linked because of the education side of it. This is where we're bringing it into schools, accepting this whole, these crazy ideas about gender and stuff. So I think it'll be really an entertaining panel, but as you can see, we're starting, the pushback is coming now. Yeah. And that's where the freedom of speech comes in. And we go back to, look, if I can just go back quickly to be honest, I wanted to acknowledge some people today because of a comment that our previous Prime Minister made. You know, it's all linked because it's all about being free to have these conversations with Sal or anything else. Like, I read an article, an email from Freedom Speech recently, and they talked about those who are empowered to protect us from harmful ideas do so inconsistently and sometimes hypocritically, and too often they're the worst perpetrators of hate themselves. And what I thought about when I read that is I had just watched Chris Hipkins say on TV, just last week, that New Zealand citizens being cookers. And what he was referring to is this whole, and I know, we can go into that later with the COVID inquiry, but, he was accusing Winston of just going after the cooker vote again. I'm thinking, astonishing.
Yeah, it is astonishing. So I'm glad you brought that up. So where did he, he did that in interview on TV. So you heard
it was
that
on TV, on the news last week. And, I just couldn't believe it. Like somebody said to me, oh, no, he said that ages ago. And I said, no, this happened just last week on TV. He actually, he said that. And I'm thinking, hang on a minute, who's a cooker? Are you talking about all of us who are unvaccinated? Because I say us because, I want the audience, your audience to know, I am unvaccinated. And, what am I, a cooker? Are we all cookers? And how disturbing that you, the leader of the country, who was the leader, actually calling New Zealand citizens cookers.
Well, it's essentially anybody that I find that anyone from that political left will often use the term for anyone that doesn't agree with them. And then you see other people use it, and then they, particularly if they're on the more centrist or right side of the fence, and they will tend to use it towards those who are unvaccinated and people that have been speaking out against COVID measures and the like. I don't know about you, Helen, I heard the term and I had no idea what it was. I was just like, I'm cookers? I mean, is this something to do with Captain Cook pigs? Because you used to call the pigs cookers, or where does this cookers come from? I'm a cook and I like cook, so I'm a cooker, I guess. I had no idea until someone had to put it in the modern vocabulary for me and explain to me what it was. But the fact that he's using what is quite openly an ad hominem against a pretty decent chunk of the New Zealand population just shows you that the arrogance that him, his former leader and collaborator, had all the way back in February 2022 is still alive and well.
Absolutely. So I wanted to acknowledge your audience who are out there who, like me, chose to keep our body autonomy, made a choice of our free will, of our freedom, in that space, and how a leader of a country can actually be so derogatory towards them, us. I just wanted to acknowledge those people out there because it's not acceptable. It's astonishing that he can get away with that. Just to put that out there, that still impacts us. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a re-victimization all over and over again. To use terms that they would use, you would have thought that they would have moved on. Now, we're going to get onto the COVID inquiry in a minute, but before we do, I want to actually head into this unteach racism information that I'd been sent, and I flicked across to you thinking you'd be, being in your old patch in education, you'd be quite interested. It's a set of guidelines that has been distributed to teachers, but like the RSC guidelines, they like the word guidelines, don't they, in education? Mm. It opened my eyes. What did you think as a former educator? If you'd received that bundle, what would your initial reaction be?
Oh, cringe, and I still cringe now, because what I did was I looked into it, and there's a particular professor who's, I read a few of the articles that are on North and South, and we'll chat about that, but there's a professor that I'd never heard of, and so I thought I'd better go and check out what she's on about. And, she talks about becoming a high expectation teacher, and I'm thinking, what are you talking about? Isn't that what we all are? Because I'm just naturally, I've always had high expectations of students. Always. It didn't matter who they were, race, culture, economic status. I've always had a high expectation. And so I'm thinking, isn't that what all teachers are? But, look, I'll be honest, there are some teachers that aren't in that space. But for me, it's just a natural thing. So I'm thinking, well, what are you talking about? So I did look into it, so we can unpack that. But the unteach racism, like I said, it's pretty cringeworthy, because 20 years ago, Marie, you know, as an early teacher, I mean, again, I'd cringe when I'd hear this constant statement, focus on the poor performance of our Māori students. This is what we heard consistently, to which I responded that my Māori students were achieving at a level as well as any non-Māori, because they were, okay? Look, yes, to one extent, there was a systemic belief that came from the ministry that put all Māori students into a box. However, what is being portrayed here in this article and in this whole unteach racism is incorrect. Because in my opinion, and from my experience, it is not just a belief solely because you are Māori. So this is more than, you know, the Māori stuff. I mean, and we're focusing on unteach racism. I mean,
so the whole document and guidelines, from me reading it, it looked like critical race theory wrapped up into a New Zealand context.
Yes.
With a Kiwi twist.
Absolutely. And just like I said, what I see in education, and a lot of people would probably agree, and I'll go out on a limb and say it's actually an elitist class of achievement that, you know, some teachers, and I will say it is out there that some teachers have this belief about who would and who would not achieve. And I assure you that I would have been put into a box of those who would not achieve. So it does happen. There are teachers who have this, you know, unfortunately, it is out there, but the majority would not do that. You know, we take our students as they come. We don't look at them about, you know, what, I mean, yes, we bring their life experience into the classroom about what they bring with them, but we don't look at them in a way where, oh, I'm going to actually put you guys into this group where I think you're not going to achieve this year. That's absolute nonsense. We lift up every child with high expectations. You know, I disagree with a lot of what this article says, but, you know, on reading it, I do have a level of sympathy, can I say, for the particular students who have made comments in it. Is it Manaki? She talks about being the first in her family to go straight from school to university. Now, I can tell you right now, I'm also the first in my family that went to university. But I assure you, I didn't get to go straight to university from school. It wasn't until two decades later that I was able to get out of the situation that I was in. So fortunately, I can say for Manaki that she actually was in a position that she could go to university, even though we're looking here at a story that talks about how unfortunate she thinks that Māori students have it. So yeah, we could go into
well,
that.
Well, I mean, again, I looked at that, and it's this perpetual victimization, yeah. This victimization mentality that they teach anybody from any oppressed class within the critical race totem. They've been taught to believe, they've been groomed and told that because you are a Indigenous minority, and let's not split the hair on Indigenous, but this is what they're told, that they therefore are a victim because of unconscious bias and systemic racism. And and this is what they're wanting to say. So when they're saying unteach racism, they're wanting to unteach this systemic white bias. So think Robin DiAngelo. I literally read that unteach racism element. I looked at that and thought, oh my gosh, white fragility was so 6 years ago. I let it go already. I thought we'd been there and done that. You know, this is, and here it appears in this New Zealand context. And that victimization is so not useful for any of these students. Where is the empowerment? And to say you can achieve, and as you say, you're an excellence teacher, you always have been, so you set those standards for those students regardless all the way along. For me, this is why charter schools are so important to now be back on the education landscape, because so many of those charter schools taught excellence regardless of circumstance. And I just, sorry, this just really knots my knickers, Helen, because I look at this and I think, you know, they are literally pouring petrol onto a fire and making it worse. And so many teachers just stand around and they go, oh, isn't that so lovely, cozy and warm?
Oh, yeah, I know. It's all that same. It's all the same stuff. And the hyperbole statements that are added to it to, you know, fuel that fire, like you said, I mean, they're grasping. The fact is, like, there's something, you know, it goes on quite a lot, actually. There's another one, Rangi Maurie says that she, you know, she knew she was in a cabbage class. And then they go on to the streaming and the grouping. I mean, we can talk a lot about the streaming. Streaming is a must, you know. And while I'm a primary school teacher and not secondary, I have asked some of the secondary school teachers that I know about it, and they said, yes, of course, streaming is still happening. You need to have those ability groupings. And I say that, you know, not every person, not everyone is a mathematician. Okay. And even at primary school, we had ability groupings, because you think about it, a five-year-old comes into school. Some of them come into school where their reading level, where they can identify numbers, they can identify words, and, you know, people have been reading to them a lot. So they're at a different level. And there's other children who can't write their own name, for example. And so, of course, we all have to put the children to where they're at. It's not about thinking, oh, you're dumb or you're not going to be able to achieve this. We have to put children where they're at for their own benefit, so that we are then teaching them to where they're at, and then incremental, you know, improving and to gain success and to be confident where they're at. You don't go and throw a child who can't write their own name in with a child who is writing sentences. Mm. I mean, you know, how's their confidence going to feel around that straight away? You know, you've got this Rangi Maurie is talking about knowing she's in the cabbage class. I mean,
but a lot of that too, though, comes down to the teaching, because I've got a situation with my youngest son, and he went to a school, his first high school, which started from year 7, and they had streaming. And he did the streaming exam, they do from year 9, and he was in C stream, and he was pretty gutted about that. He's a real middle of the bell curve kid. He'd always sort of been there. And so he was there, but he had some deficits, particularly around reading. So the first few years, that was fine. He did level 1, and they... And a lot of his achievements, he was essentially, again, getting lots of achieves, the odd non-achieved. And every now and then we'd throw out a merit and we'd really celebrate that merit with him because he'd put the work in. But he was just, his fire wasn't being lit. And then they did a second, before they headed into level 1, they did a second, like a restream test to see where you sat. And he stayed in C-stream. And he was really gutted about that because he'd put in a huge amount of work. He felt that he could have moved up, because he'd put the work in. No, this is where you're at. You're only going to take this level of maths and you're only going to do this. And they never really put the work in. And we saw across that level 1 year, so it's that year 11, just the light go out of his eyes in his schooling. And it was just heartbreaking. And I'd say to him, well, you know, have you done this? Have you put this in? And the only classes that he would be excited about were the classes that fell outside the streaming. So he'd taken a class where mostly A and B stream kids were in because of what the elective was. And those were the classes he was enjoying. Anyway, long story short, cyclone, all the rest of it, we moved him to be with his brother at the Catholics. They don't do that. And because of this Catholic nature and special character of the school, they have a lot of kids that require additional educational assistance, which is why our oldest son is there. He has utterly thrived in that environment. So no streaming. The maths teacher, the head of maths, came to me and said, why on earth is he in internal maths? This is ridiculous. I can't believe. He said, I'm giving him extension work and he's more than capable of doing it. It's like, because that's where they placed him. And they didn't allow him to break out of that box. Mm. So he is now in level 2, getting merits and excellence, and he is gunning. He has now set a goal that he wants an excellence endorsed for level 2. I can tell you right now, he wouldn't have even gotten near that if he'd stayed at his old school.
Mm. Look, you've made a really relevant, important point there, and I agree with you. You know, we can't keep them in these boxes. Streaming's important to a degree where where we're making sure that, you know, there's this thing that comes through where everyone's equal and should be treated the same. I mean, that's Marxism, right? We don't need to dumb down a group that is achieving faster in some areas than others. And it is around the teaching. Like you said, it's a teacher's responsibility For example, we had these groups in primary school, and I ensured to make sure that, you hear it, you have children thinking, oh, I'm in this group because I can't read as well as this child. And so as a teacher, you make sure that you set them all up for success. And I used to have conversations with my students, those who actually were in the lower ability for reading. I used to make sure that they knew that while such and such may be up here with theirs, that's all very well, but you've got these strengths in all these other areas, and look at your maths. And so you would make sure that you let that child know that everybody has strengths in different areas as well. And that doesn't have to be fixed either. But at this stage, it's important that we're working on, where you're at, kind of thing. So it really is a teacher responsibility to make sure you're using the language where we're not, having that, like your son experienced, where, they're feeling that and taking that internally about where they're at. I was always given the students that, were in the kind of lower groupings, and I loved those groups. I absolutely love them, because they are the ones where you see so much growth. If you're the right teacher, that's actually instilling that they can do it. And so students who may not be in the top reading group, for example, doesn't mean to say they're bad readers or that they're never going to actually become as amazing, high quality readers as the others. It's just that at that time and space, this is where they're at, and then a good teacher will pull them out of that and actually get them to the other level, which we do.
Identify if there's an issue that needs additional support or a different teaching style or
absolutely
all of those things. Absolutely, yeah.
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 In terms of this unteach racism, I don't know how much of it's already embedded, how many schools are picking it up. I'm picking that the ones that will absolutely run with the ball with this are the ones that are running with the ball on the REC education guidelines as well. I think that there is a school type.
Cultural Marxism, do you mean?
I was trying to soften that a little bit, Helen, but okay. And I guess that comes down to leadership, doesn't it?
It does come down to leadership. You're right. It's no different than a particular school down here, down south, who was pushing the gender identity stuff and is a model school for that, would you believe? Whereas other schools won't touch it, won't go near it. You might have noticed a lot of talk around the Pride week or month or whatever it is. I can't keep up. How a lot of, there's a lot more of the public now who are aware of what's going on, and they have been taking it into their own hands and going to their schools and talking to the principals. And I've seen the conversations where a lot of them have said, oh, my school has told me they're not touching that, they're not doing those lessons, they're not doing this. And so, unfortunately, you've got some schools who are pushing it and, others that aren't. But those ones who are pushing it are doing all of this nonsense, unteach racism. Yeah.
I guess that, again, it comes down to what we've discussed in the past, is as a parent, we need to actively seek out what it is that they are teaching. Because I think there are some schools that actually teach quality, not equity, equality very well. So I know, for example, with our boys, again, being in the Catholic system, they have their own VET and Catholic character stuff. So it's based very much on the Christian principle and what I would call very old school, very traditional stuff that we all grew up with and would understand. And sometimes these little modern twists. My youngest son keeps very close eye on where things are at with us. And so he comes home and shares his resources, and there's been nothing that I've seen that he comes home with or I've looked into that has rung alarm bells for me, which is a huge relief. But then there are other schools, as you said. I think if you're a parent and you're like, ooh, that's where you have to get actively involved. That's where you need to gather a group of other parents too. I find sometimes I've spoken to parents who have tried to go in and have meetings with principals or APs and sit down and discuss these things. And as a lone parent, it can be very daunting and intimidating. But if you actually gather a group of you up or speak at a board of trustees meeting, ask to have a presentation or be able to submit to a board of trustees meeting, if you don't get any joy with school management, you have to really be knocking on that door and making sure that you are pushing to have your voice heard. essentially, isn't it?
Yeah, agree. As a parent, I know all about how, and you've probably come across this stuff too, with my own sons, I learned very early on in their earlier childhood that you have to fight for your children in a lot of areas, right? As a parent, never take it for granted that everybody's doing the right thing by your children. You need to be actively involved. And you know, we don't, unfortunately, some parents do just drop them off at the gate. And, you know, we can all be in that class occasionally when you're so busy, you've got to get off to work and get on with your life. And you think your kids are safe, they're well taken care of. And in some schools, they are. And, you know, there's fantastic teachers out there, but there's always some that take it upon themselves to push their ideals onto children. Yeah, so look, thanks for bringing that up because, you know, and I mentioned it as well, it's coming into the university. You know, we had the Māori professor who had jumped in there in our first year, making, you know, the students in the lecture theatre feel like they should be ashamed for what their great-grandparents did many years ago. And so it's right through, you know, that racism kind of thing. I mean, what is racism? What is racist? Because, you know, when we look at this again, just one more thing I want to touch on is this is not only, I said, about race. It's actually, what about our students that have got disabilities? What about boys? So I did ask a few other people their thoughts on this unteach racism. And it was mentioned to me that a particular high school, this person who was on the board of trustees, saw that there was an assumption from a particular teacher, or maybe more, that they looked at their boys like they weren't going to achieve in particular areas. So they'd send them off basically to like climb a tree, you know, during this particular period. And so it's not only, you know, this is across the board. You know, I mean, you get this with some teachers where, yeah, they'll look at boys. I mean, I was given always a top-heavy boy class because I related really well and taught boys well. Maybe that's because I'm a mother of boys. But, you know, we're building go-karts at primary school, you know, to get the boys engaged. And it is about the teacher, again, their responsibility to engage your students, whether they are boys, whether they are children who have come to school not with the same level of ability at that point, or whether they're children that have been classed as some disability, whether it's, or you know, whether they have autism or anything like that. I always had those high expectations. And so this is not only this is not racist. This is, what is racist to you, Marie? I mean, what do you think when you think about racist behaviour?
Well, yeah, racist behaviour is directly disadvantage or being abusive to a person solely because of their race. Whereas now the new definition is based around power, a power dynamic that you have over a person due to their race. And Helen, what you're talking about is boundaries. Is boundaries. I mean, as to, you know, again, having a son who is on the spectrum, one of the things that he needed was very, very clear boundaries. And those boundaries and the ability for teachers to set boundaries and teach within boundaries have been eroded from what I've seen in the time that my son's come through to parents that I talk to now. I've got kids in the primary system, it's that whole postmodernism thing. What is a boundary? What is a boundary? Is it what you identify? Is it what is it there? It's all smoke and mirrors. And I don't know about, look, I'm not a teacher, but I've been a mum. Kids need direction. They need to be corralled. They need to know what they're doing. They need to know, you know, ouchie versus this is safe. They need to know all of those things, and they've got to have the risk. They need to push and sometimes and risk and test and action and consequence. They need to be modelled to by their parents and by their teachers. They need to have all of these things.
Thank you.
And they're not getting them. I'm ranting today, Helen.
The rant is good because it's all fluffy, right? At school now, it's this modern stuff. It's like direct their own learning. I mean, get a grip. You know, like you said, we're parents. We know that, okay, you've got a very small percentage of children that can direct their own learning and that actual stay on task. The majority will not. You know, there's this push about self-management. I mean, like you said, they need direction. I mean, it's all fluffy, airy-fairy, like the last education minister, you know, very fluffy. We have to, guide our children. The reason I was given boys is because I did manage them really well, and that's because I had the high expectations, but I also had boundaries. And it was a lot of the boys that I did have that were the most challenging were the ones that actually at the end of the year would give me the hug, right?
Yeah.
Because they knew where they stood. They knew that I cared enough to instill in them expectations.
And natural competitiveness too. Boys naturally competitive.
And that's okay. It's okay to want to win. It's okay to be competitive.
Oh, yeah. We used to have a thing with our sons. It used to drive my husband and I insane. Insane. Because our boys are very close together and they're academically a year apart. So we would get home from school and we'd pull up into where we live, and they'd literally, the car had barely come to a stop. The pair of them would shoot out of the car, and they had this whole competition called First Door. Who was going to get to the door first.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, this is their natural competitiveness.
Of course it is. Do you know the term shotgun?
Yes, about who gets the front seat. Oh, believe it, there was a lot of that in our house.
Shotgun. You know, that's what most parents want to hear, right? I mean,
and that's been stifled out of them, you know, whereas I find that curiosity has been snuffed out in a lot of young women, and competitiveness has been absolutely stifled in young boys. And it's, I find it sad.
Look, just really quick, I have to jump in. You know, you mentioned it, I mean, about the girls. You know, we've got this push now where, you know, they say, oh, yay, we've got 50% or over represented in Parliament. But you get that everywhere now. And it's like you hear these comments like, oh, there's not enough girls in the sciences or here and here, and we have to do something about it. Well, actually, how ridiculous. It's like some girls just don't want to do science, and some girls don't want to do, I don't like maths. I would put it right out there now. I don't like technology. People that know me well, know that I can't stand technology. And I mean, I manage quite well, to be honest, but I don't like it. I don't like maths at all, which is why I'm a primary school teacher. And so, you know, we don't have to take children or people out of boxes that they like and feel comfortable. Yes, it's good to challenge. It is good to jump out of your comfort zone. But if you actually prefer that this is the way you like to do something, then that's okay as well. Yeah, this whole, you know, when we talked about the trad wife stuff, it's okay for women to enjoy baking and cleaning. I mean, what's wrong with that? You know, not saying that they can't do all these other things as well, but
unless you're Rebecca Kitteridge and then we're a domestic terrorist, Helen, so, you know.
I know, right? I mean, that's another conversation. Gosh.
Oh, I know. I think that was our previous conversation for those that missed it. Well, look, I'm going to make sure that the resource that I've been given, I'm going to have that with Liz. So if anyone out there wants to get a copy of that, just email Liz at inbox@realitycheck.radio and she will have a copy of that. And you can have a look. And you can, and if you need to, go to your school and say, hey, are you guys putting these guidelines in at the school? I'd like to have a conversation about it. And as I said, gather up a little group of people and do it together as a group, because that often can be safer. You know, you can feel more comfortable doing it as, two or three of you as opposed to one. Yeah. Lastly, before we head off, COVID inquiry, expanded terms of reference in this now second phase. The relief, I have to admit, was for me was great. It's interesting they're still allowing this first tranche to be completed. So that, look, it's nice that they're letting the current commission grade their own homework, which is really good. I think, you know, then they could, and then the real inquiry, I think, is probably going to start come from November. What are your thoughts with your politician hat on now, Helen?
Okay, so with my politician hat on, I have to give, you know, to be honest, I have to give Winston credit when it's due. He has done, you know, he's followed through here, and if it wasn't for that push from his party, I don't know if we'd be in this position. And, you know, his comments just recently alluding to the past way that government responded as fascist behaviour, I have to take my hat off to him. You know, I don't agree with everything there, but 100%, it's a really positive move to see that this is going to be a real, a real inquiry. So, I mean, obviously there's a lot to happen yet, and it'll be interesting to see what that looks like. And again, for your audience out there, they'll be anxiously waiting to see what happens in that space. So well done to Winston Peters, I have to say.
I think we when we got the news last week, there was a tremendous amount of relief because, as many may know, you know, we really encouraged people to put in submissions, and we ran that the COVID campaign, and so many have been unheard in this time. And it will be really interesting to see what comes out of that inquiry next year. And I have to admit, me for one will be looking forward to seeing what is resolved. And as to inquiries around the world are starting to come through, and there's now a wealth of information that is coming out around harms. And New Zealand is just one of many Western nations that fell into this trap, I think, that happened. And I think we will probably find that we have the same issues, if not greater, than many of those other Western nations. So it's not just
those who've been damaged, you know, it's the division in the society. You know, we talked about that right at the beginning, where you had Chris Hipkins calling us names, you know, and so all of that, even the division, is going to be looked at in that. And I'm glad to see that they have widened it to things like that where the last government brushed over us as the river of filth, our day in court basically will come, because justice and justice, you're going to hear a lot more from me and our party around that, because we've been unpacking what we look like going forward. And I mean, it makes sense that I'm doing law because I am hugely about justice. And so, yeah, I'll talk about that another time. But there's justice is really important in so many areas, right?
And there's a reason too that so many politicians have a law background, because I mean that's part of the role, isn't it, as an elected representative, is you are tasked with creating the boundaries for a country and helping make new laws. So you've got to understand it.
Yeah, look, that links in quite nicely to I think what you might want to finish off with, because it doesn't matter how anybody lives. And you know, I'll have different values and morals, and they might be different to other people, but I still have to make sure that I stand up for all people in that justice space. I don't pick sides like what Chris Hipkins has done and what, you know, the Green Party did with the whole Rose Posey Parker. You know, they were choosing sides. As a politician or would-be politician, you know, on the outside, yes, we stand up for those people who we're standing up for, but once you get into power, you're still protecting those you go in for, but there's a level of where you should be looking out for all people, not just picking a side.
I think that's a great way to finish things up, looking out for all people. I think that is a really lovely sentiment. This is Helen Houghton, leader of the New Conservative Party and third year law student. It's so great to talk to you again, Helen. And we're going to do this on a regular basis, you and I. We're going to catch up every 6 weeks or so and just sort of, you know, chew the fat on what's going on, because there's always stuff. There's always things that we can talk about. I know. I'm really looking forward to it. Thank you, Helen. And as I mentioned before, I'll have that bundle with Liz at inbox@realitycheck.radio if you want to have a look at that on the Unteach Racism. And the Sal Grover information, if people are wanting to find out whether there are still tickets available or confirmation on where venues are if things have changed. What you've got that posted on your Facebook page. And where
I
else?
Do, but if you go into Women's Rights Party with Jill Ovens, you click on there and the tickets, you go straight through to purchase a ticket. So you've got Auckland Thursday the 4th of July, which is like tomorrow, right? And then you've got a Saturday the 6th of July, Tuesday the 9th in Wellington, and in Christchurch Wednesday the 10th of July. And I know those tickets are coming through, which is really fantastic. So there's clearly an audience for that. I'd please encourage more to go and purchase more tickets, because as you know, or may have heard, one venue was cancelled. There is pushback happening. So we know that it's important to get people along, because when you're trying to cancel somebody, we know there's a reason for that. And so let's all get out there and support Sal and what she's going through in Australia, because this is happening coming to New Zealand.
Absolutely. And we'll make sure that we have that link with Liz. Hey, thanks, Helen. And I look forward to catching up with you again in the coming months.
Same. Thank you, Marie.
Are you on the RCR mailing list? Never miss a beat of the news and hard-hitting stories you've come to know and love. Stay in the loop. Visit realitycheck.radio/email.